This is Cave Scott Allen of OJCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded April 25th, 2013. Today we're talking to Tomasz, and I forgot to ask how to pronounce your last name.
Jańczuk.
Okay, as you say. and we're talking to you about Edge.js. And so can you start by introducing yourself?
I'm Tomasz Jańczuk. I'm an engineer at Microsoft, and I've been focusing on Node.js for the past 2 or 3 years.
Okay. Already that seems surprising to me that it's been that long of an effort. What all have you been doing in that role during that time?
So Microsoft engaged in Node.js around 2010 to kind of help make that project run on Windows just as well as it did on Linux. And right around that time, there was an effort started at Microsoft around, first of all, making sure that Node.js engine itself runs very well on Windows. And we kind of succeeded doing that with the version 0.6 being the first one that runs truly cross-platform and uses native Windows mechanisms. But separately from that, there are also other efforts around Windows Azure to provide a kind of world-class hosting platform for Node.js applications in Windows Azure. And part of that is IIS module called IIS Node, which I wrote, which enables hosting Node.js applications in IIS.
Okay. All right. So most recently, why we set this podcast up was to talk about Edge.js. So I first heard about it, you titled it Owen, but then renamed it to Edge, I think, because there was confusion over the Owen project, which we just interviewed on our very recent show as well.
Right. So the confusion stems from the kind of origins of the Edge.js project. Originally, the idea was to provide a way to author connect middleware and express JS request handlers using .NET. And that's why I call that module Owen, because that had a very close resemblance to the concept of the Owen interface in .NET.
Okay.
However, over time, that project evolved into something much more generic than just connect middleware and express handlers, and therefore I renamed it.
Okay. So can you describe Edge.js in a nutshell?
So in a nutshell, it allows you to run Node.js and .NET code in one process and provides an interop mechanisms between the two.
Okay.
So you can basically call .NET code from Node.js and call Node.js code from .NET.
Okay. So why is that useful? What would you want to do with that?
Today you can pretty much do everything in either Node.js or .NET. Node.js has over 25,000 modules on NPM. .NET obviously comes with .NET framework, which is already very rich, but it also has support of around 12,000 NuGet packages. So you can claim that you can do pretty much everything regardless which framework you choose. However, specific things are frequently better done in one of these frameworks. So just to give you an example, when you want to talk to an MS SQL database, there is nothing that beats ADO.NET in .NET framework. There are some modules for Node.js that enable you to talk to MS SQL Server, for example, Node.TDS or the native SQL driver that Microsoft shipped. However, these are parallel implementations to a technology that has already existed for a decade. So instead of using these modules, you can really bridge over to a technology that existed for 10 years and has been kind of battle proven, and use around 100 lines of ADO.NET to achieve the basic CRUD over an MS SQL database. So that's one example. So one other interesting application of Edge.js is in running CPU-bound computations. With Edge.js, you can run those computations on a CLR thread pool without blocking the single-threaded Node.js event loop. So while your application is doing some CPU-intensive tasks, your web server written in Node.js remains responsive to subsequent Node.js requests. However, if you kind of step back, I think there are two classes of scenarios where Edge.js is useful. So one is to basically allow you to choose a technology that is better better fit for a particular task at hand within the scope of a single process. And a second class of scenarios is whenever you think of writing a native extension for Node.js, today it requires you to drop down to raw C and OS-specific mechanisms. So on Windows, it would be Win32, or corresponding mechanisms on Linux or other operating systems. So bottom line, it is up to you to kind of square away the operating system differences. You have to deal with them when authoring the native extension. With Edge.js, you can pretty much write native extensions using .NET, which already provides a very rich abstraction over the underlying operating system and allows you to author those extensions in .NET instead of Win32 and C++.
Okay, so that brings up a question I was going to ask later, but I was curious, and we've gotten some questions over Twitter about this as well. Jason Denizak and Kevin Swiber both asked about mono support, and the reason I'm thinking of that is, you know, you're talking about abstracting differences away.
Yeah, so currently Edge.js only works on Windows. However, support for Mono is issue number 3 on GitHub. So this actually came up very early in the project lifetime. It is very important to a number of people, and there is an active effort going on to support Mono.
Okay. And is that a huge effort to do that? I mean, is it complicated, or is it fit with the current model reasonably well, and it's just, you know, a little bit of work to do?
Edge.js itself is a small but quite complex module. You know, what Edge.js effectively does is it hosts two virtual machines in one process. So there is V8, which powers Node.js, and there is CLR that powers .NET. So doing that only on the Windows platform was non-trivial, so to say. However, there are additional difficulties with support for Mono that are related to the kind of implementation detail of the Windows support. In case of the Windows version of the module, we are using C++ CLI as a way of adding CLR virtual machine to the Node.exe process. That technology is not supported on Mono, so we have to, in case of Mono, we have to drop down to a more manual mechanism of hosting Mono CLR.
Okay, so to step back to a higher level, I mean, when I tried this out, I did npm install Edge, and then I also added Edge-CS. I don't know if I needed to do that.
You didn't. So by default, when you do npm install Edge, you'll get support for C#.
Okay.
And scripting C# within Node.js applications. However, Edge.js supports an extensible mechanism to plug in other CLR languages. And currently, what you can get is support for Python using Iron Python. So just as you can script C# inside of a Node.js application, you can script Python. As well as there is a plugin that enables you to script PowerShell.
Okay. So then once I've got that installed, I grabbed your samples directory off the GitHub repo and then just open it up and just start going node and then typing the name of a sample. And they would all just run in the console, and they were either, you know, .js or .csx files, and the JS would call into the CSX or vice versa, right?
So there are several ways of integrating .NET code into Node.js applications with which Edge.js enables. So in a kind of simplest way, let's actually start from the most basic way. In the most basic way, you create a JavaScript function wrapper around a method that is already defined in a precompiled CLR DLL. So you basically call a special function that the Edge.js module provides, and you specify the name of the CLR DLL as well as the class name and the method name to wrap. So this is the most fundamental mechanism of integrating CLR code into Node.js. However, the most of the examples that come with Edge.js show you actually the much more frictionless way of embedding C# code literally inside of your JS file. And there is a variety of mechanisms you can use to do that. You can express the C# code as a simple JavaScript string, or in case of multi-line C# scripts, you can use a convention of multi-line JavaScript comments that are later processed with regular expressions to extract the C# code and compile it on the fly. So Edge.js can use basically the CodeDOM compiler that comes with .NET Framework 4.5 to compile the C# code on the fly.
Okay. Yeah, and I liked how they progress from, you know, the very simple, like 101, 102, which were very, you know, a few lines. And then pretty soon by the, you know, 200, 300, or I guess 200 level ones, there's some pretty long functions in here.
You can pretty much embed any class library in and use any class library that way within a Node.js application. However, what Edge.js does is it provides a very prescriptive interop model between Node.js and CLR. It doesn't allow you to just call any CLR function from Node.js. It forces you, that function, to have a very specific signature. So oftentimes it will require you to create small wrappers in .NET to actually expose the functionality that you care about. And the reason I've done it that way, there have been a few projects previously that attempted to be very generic and allow you to call any .NET function from Node.js. However, there is a big impedance mismatch between Node.js and .NET in that everything in Node.js is expected to be asynchronous. And in case of .NET, there are many, many functions that are actually synchronous. So in order to avoid that impedance mismatch, what I've done is I prescribed an interop model whereby everything in .NET that Edge.js can call to must be expressed as an async function delegate. So frequently what you'll have to do if you have some synchronous long-running function, like, for example, let's say conversion of an image from GIF to JPEG. This is a good example of a kind of CPU-bound operation. In case of integration of such a logic with Node.js, what you would want to do is to run that logic on a separate CLR thread and create an async wrapper around that logic that is exposed to Node.js. And only when that CLR code finishes will Node.js be notified using the standard callback mechanism in Node.js. That way, Node.js can basically continue processing subsequent events on its singleton event loop, even while some CLR computation is running in the background.
Okay, that makes sense. Kevin, Scott, any questions so far? Comments?
No, nothing. Okay. It's a fascinating project, though.
Okay, well, here's a question. So when I, you know, hear about like these kinds of integrations, I flash back to like COM interop stuff with the CLR, where there was this, you know, there's a sort of a little bit of an impedance mismatch between the two that could end up with all kinds of problems. Were there any issues around that about, you know, garbage collected objects or, you know, object lifetime issues or anything along those lines?
Well, I wouldn't say problems, but there were definitely challenges along these lines. So a few of the kind of hard technical problems that needed to be solved to enable this kind of integration is reconciling threading models between Node.js and CLR, and reconciling object lifetimes between the V8 and CLR heap. So Node.js has a single-threaded architecture. Everything in Node.js is asynchronous. There is that expectation that no blocking code is running as part of your application. In case of CLR, there is no such assumption. CLR provides support for multi-threading on multiple threads. So there was that challenge of reconciling these threading models, and that's why that prescriptive interop pattern of normalizing all .NET code into an asynchronous function delegate comes in. This helps address that problem by making it very explicit that the expectation is that whatever logic you expose from .NET to Node.js must be captured as an asynchronous delegate. That helps reconcile the threading models. In case of object lifetimes, the way the data is marshaled between V8 and CLR heaps is everything is marshaled by value. So that kind of removes the problem of reconciling lifetimes of objects on these two heaps simply because they are completely separate. So if you pass a string from Node.js to CLR, CLR will have its own copy of the string on its own heap, and the lifetime of that string will be governed by CLR, while the lifetime of the Node.js copy of the string will be governed by V8. The only artifact that is marshaled by reference is the function delegate. So you can either expose functions from .NET to Node.js or functions from Node.js to .NET using that prescriptive pattern I just talked about. And in that case, let's say you are exposing a function from .NET to Node.js. What Edge will do is it will create a JavaScript function that is really a very thin proxy over the corresponding .NET function. However, in that case, the .NET function should not be garbage collected as long as a reference to the JavaScript proxy exists in Node.js. And vice versa, if you expose a Node.js function to .NET, a very lightweight .NET proxy wrapper is created around the JavaScript implementation of that function, and the JavaScript function should not be garbage collected until the proxy exists in .NET. So there is a little bit of object lifetime reconciliation going on to provide that level of guarantee.
Just so I understand this, does that mean that, you know, since you have this sort of marshal by value approach, does that mean you can't marshal like a CLR object directly over to the node side and poke at its properties? Like, you have to...
Well, you can. You basically, you have support at the atomic level. You have support for strings, ints, enums. Then you go into complex structures like arrays and objects in .NET. And you can marshal that data in a way very similar to what happens when you're serializing that data to JSON. So basically, you have some logic that reflects on the .NET side over the object that you want to marshal and recreates a corresponding structure using V8 data types.
Okay, but you don't get it. You don't get essentially a live CLR object that you could poke at.
No, you don't.
Okay,
but
gotcha.
Again, using the function proxies, you can effectively create closures over some CLR state. So for example, if you have a person object in .NET, you can create an instance of the person object and expose interesting methods of that object to JavaScript by creating a function delegate over that instance. And that the closure of that function delegate will include the instance of the person object. So in that way, you can expose the functionality of a particular instance, .NET instance, to Node.js.
So is it just a problem with reference types, or could you pass like structs over and without having to do the serialization step?
So to be specific, I'm not doing any serialization at all. The reference to JSON serialization was just a parallel I was drawing. What the marshalling layer in Node.js is doing, it is kind of reflecting over the instance that you want to marshal across the boundary to Node.js. And it is recreating in memory a corresponding representation of that object using V8 typeset. So for example, if you have a person object in .NET, and if you, let's say, use JavaScript serializer to serialize that person object, your expectation is that all the public properties and public fields will be represented in that serialized form, right? So similarly to JavaScript serialization, what Edge will do is it will take that instance of the person object and it will create a JavaScript object with similar properties and values on it.
So to be fair, instead of serialization, it's more like Kevin Warmer is more like thunking back in the old Win32, Win16 days, kind of. You're just translating across a type. Okay.
Yes, it's, you know, conceptually it is useful to think about it as serializing it to JSON and then deserializing it in a different technology. Except that the actual implementation doesn't do any serialization, but marshals the data directly between CLR and V8. So the end result is the same, but we are not paying the cost of JSON serialization.
Okay. So, you know, as we're talking back and forth between the two of these, it seems like the real life use case would probably be like you're referencing a file. You know, you keep your C# code in a separate file or in an assembly. But I did notice you have support for debugging inline. So you've got, you know, JavaScript code with C# code, and then you can set an environment variable that allows debugging.
Yes, this is actually a very good example of community contribution. It was added by one passionate member of the community around Edge.js. So the way it works is Edge.js, when you specify a C# code inline within your JS file, it will use the CodeDOM compiler that ships with .NET Framework 4.5 to compile that code on the fly into an in-memory assembly. At that time, you can say that you want to specify also debugging information. You want to generate that assembly with debugging information. And what it later allows you to do is to actually attach Visual Studio or any other managed debugger to the node.exe process that runs your Edge.js code. And remember that at that point, that node.exe process is running native code, which is Node.js, but it also runs managed code because Edge.js has pulled in and started hosting CLR within that process. So at that point, you tell VS that you want to attach to node.exe and that you want to debug managed code inside of that executable. And from there, you can go ahead and set breakpoints in what from JavaScript perspective looks like a comment, but from Edge.js perspective, it is the actual C# code. And you can debug C# code that is embedded in a Node.js application that way.
Okay. So what would be, like, it seems like a next step or something that I would be more likely to use this with is, say, for instance, I'm doing a Node application and there's a NuGet package or something that directly solves something I want to do. And, you know, for some of the reasons you described, maybe it's, you know, interoperating with, you know, something that's an established thing on .NET or, you know, works better with multi-threader or whatever. Is there, you know, a path to incorporating something that's in a NuGet package? Is it basically like just grab the assembly and reference it? Or, you know, is there any kind of NuGet interoperate?
Yeah, so there is nothing out of the box right now. So how you get the DLL on your box is up to you. If you want to use NuGet to download it, you can do that. But the kind of least common denominator in Edge.js is that you have to point at some DLL that exists on disk. So this is what comes out of the box with Edge.js. However, there is already an open issue on integration of Edge.js with Script.cs, which is a project Glenn Block started lately.
You took my next question.
Yeah. Here you go. So, you know, that is obviously a very beneficial relationship that would be possible, enabled by that integration. You would basically be able to point at JS at a little piece of C# code that later has enough directive baked in to pull in additional NuGet packages and reference assemblies and so on, and compile that code using Roslyn as opposed to the built-in CodeDOM compiler.
Okay. And then, you know, what's the overhead? Like, it seems like hosting, you know, a few virtual machines in a process and, you know, marshaling things back and forth. Is there a huge amount of performance overhead in doing this and memory overhead?
You know, obviously, there is overhead of hosting two virtual machines in one process as opposed to one. However, you have to put it in the context, you have to ask that question in the context of what is your alternative. Because without Edge.js, if you really need to use some .NET functionality, your only alternative is to spin up another process that is a .NET process and establish some form of inter-process communication between the Node.js process and the .NET process. So if you combine the resource use between the node.exe process and your .NET process, it is pretty much a wash compared to running the very same two virtual machines inside of a single process. Right? So it all kind of depends on perspective. If you compare using Edge.js to writing your entire application in Node.js, for example, then obviously it will be much worse off. You'll be much worse off. However, Edge.js is not really trying to compete with writing your app in Node.js with pure Node.js. If you can do this, you should absolutely do that without using Edge.js. Edge.js is trying to be helpful whenever you really have a need to interact with some .NET code, some CLR code, as part of your overall application. It just makes it much easier to pull that execution in process with Node.js than to deal with the additional complexity of having two processes and you know, managing their lifetimes and the communication between them.
Is there a noticeable delay or impact on the process when you actually like do that first, you know, require edge? I mean, like, at what point does the CLR VM get bootstrapped into the process and all the spin up happen?
So
that a noticeable delay?
The moment you call require edge, this is the moment where the C++ CLI node extension is loaded up and the CLR VM starts running within node.exe. I didn't measure this, but you know, when you run the samples, I would say there is no noticeable delay over just running a vanilla. So it is not a delay that a human would notice, so to say. But you know, I don't have any benchmarks that would measure how much slower it is in practice.
Okay, but it'd be something where you could do this at like in your application spin up, you would do a require edge just to get that stuff bootstrapped in, and then
yes,
then you're ready to go.
Right.
So what was the most difficult part of implementing this?
I think we already touched on these two aspects. So one was reconciling the lifetimes of the function proxies, which is the only type that is marshaled by reference between V8 and CLR. There was a number of issues, and I'm sure there are still a few hiding in there, that ultimately may lead to an AV simply because .NET code is trying to call to something that V8 has already disposed. But I'm hoping that we are already over the hump of the kind of low-hanging fruit and the majority of those issues has been flushed out. So that was one aspect. And another one was reconciling threading models. So you can think of that problem as a very similar problem to writing a UI application in, let's say, WinForms, where you can have as many threads as you want in your application, but you can manipulate the UI only from a very specific thread. So what WinForms does is it provides you that synchronization mechanism that allows you to go back onto the UI thread whenever you need to update the UI. In case of Edge.js, I had to implement a very similar synchronization mechanism to allow you to call Node.js from any CLR thread, simply because all operations that involve Node.js must be executed on a very specific singleton thread within Node.exe. And CLR being multi-threaded, you really have no control over the threads that your code is using. So whenever you're making a Node.js call from your .NET code, we first detect if you are already running on that singleton V8 thread, and if so, we just let it continue. And if not, we need to do a thread switch.
So I think it'd be useful if you needed to have a custom forms-based auth against an Active Directory, or if you were needing to access some kind of legacy data layer, maybe written in some ancient language like, you know, C# 2. Those are the kind of interop scenarios that I saw this would make possible.
Yeah, there is actually a number of scenarios along these lines where you have some kind of technology that is very specific either to .NET or Windows, and Edge.js provides a very easy bridge to that technology. So, for example, accessing X509 certificate store, or accessing Windows registry, or accessing Active Directory, calling to MS SQL, providing a very easy way to zip files and folders, providing support for image conversion. All these things that haven't made it to Node.js as Node.js modules, and chances are that you never will, simply because some technologies are already becoming, you know, redundant, like, I don't know, SOAP services is a good example. You know, you may have a number of SOAP services that your application needs to call out there, and there is very little in terms of SOAP support in Node.js today. So what you can do is you can use Edge.js to call into .NET and use Windows Communication Foundation, which has a very rich support for calling SOAP services to access that, so to say, legacy infrastructure.
Yeah, the sample code there for the X509 is, I mean, it's really pretty, like, shortened to the point. Yeah, that's a good example.
How are exceptions handled? I mean, can you just throw an exception on the DCLR side and have it mapped over to?
Yes. So exceptions are actually marshaled both ways. If your JavaScript code throws an exception, it'll be marshaled to CLR, and vice versa. If CLR throws an exception, it'll be marshaled to V8. In case of marshaling CLR exceptions to Node.js, what happens is we are actually serializing that exception to a string, including a stack trace and everything, and rethrowing that string on the Node.js side. So that way you get a very rich diagnostics information as to what went wrong within your Node.js application. Of course, it's a bit funky to look at an exception that combines Node.js stack frames and CLR stack frames, but it still lets you nail down the root cause of what's going on.
How tied to the Node version is this implementation? I mean, is this the kind of thing that's going to break when a new, you know, version of Node comes out?
This works on every version starting from 0.6 on Windows. So I tested and developed it against 0.6, 0.8, and 0.10. Chances are that some Node.js versions, especially from the unstable releases, the 0.7 and 0.9, may not work. I didn't even bother testing those. So if you pick a stable Node.js version 0.6 or later, it should work.
And do you have to have code to handle different versions, or are these fairly stable interfaces that you work against?
They are fairly stable. There is one difference at the libuv layer, which is a layer that abstracts away the OS differences between IO primitives, between operating systems. So there was one change that affected my code base, which I kind of had to compile conditionally and ship actually three versions of Edge binary. But besides that, I haven't come across any issues with either Node.js or libuv between these versions.
Okay. I had a few questions on coming at things from the other side. So Jeremy Miller had asked, he'd seen, you know, examples of hosting .NET in a Node process, but what about running Node in a .NET process? And I know you've got a... an open issue on this one, the mission double edge, right?
Right. So as much as Edge allows you to call into .NET code from Node.exe right now, the reverse is not possible today. So if you want to call Node.js code from .NET process, you still have to start with a Node.exe. And the way to do it is to provide a very thin JavaScript wrapper, which will basically load up your managed assembly and call into its entry point and reverse the control of the application, so to say. The reason you cannot start with a managed executable and call into Node.js is that as of today, Node.js does not support a hosting model. So there, Node.js ships Node.exe, but it doesn't ship a shared Node library or a Node library in general that can be linked into some other executable, which would enable hosting Node.js in other processes. So if and when that happens, nothing should stand in the way of actually providing support for calling Node.js from a first-class .NET executable.
Okay, and then this would be part of the whole thing with the Script.cs integration as well, right?
This is kind of orthogonal to Script.cs integration, but at that point, I imagine that it will make sense to ship Edge.js as a NuGet package in addition to an NPM module to provide a better support for people who actually start with .NET and just want to do some specific things in Node.js, like talk to MongoDB, for example.
Okay. Part of what got me thinking of that is I noticed a lot of your samples, there's .js files and then the CS files are .csx. Did you name them that way to fit in with the naming convention of, Script.cs?
That was one reason. And another one is that I'm using some conventions that Roslyn allows you to use in CSX files. So specifically, I allow you to specify additional assemblies as a reference right there within the source code.
Right. Okay. Which is a good thing to point out. So you've got the comments with the hash R before those, right?
Yes, exactly. So that pattern is very similar to what Roslyn introduces in the CSX files, which is they basically give you the exact same syntax without the comment. So they do pound R and assembly name, And I have to do the comment because I'm passing that code verbatim to the codon provider in .NET 4.5, which doesn't understand the concept of pound R.
Okay. Okay, so so that catches us up to what, you know, what's capable right now. What are plans going forward then?
There are two aspects that are on top of my mind. One is support for Mono. There is a very large number of people who expressed interest in using this technology on non-Windows platforms. So there is an ongoing effort going on to provide support for Mono. And a second one is building support for languages other than C#, Python, and PowerShell, which are supported right now. And specifically, the one language that is on top of the list is F#. There is also an interestingly high interest from the F# community to support integration with Node.js.
Okay, and how difficult is integrating new language support? Is that a whole new thing or?
High level, the model that Node.js supports for integrating other languages is by way of shipping additional modules on NPM. There is a very loose coupling between the Node.js module itself and a module that provides support for another language. No changes are necessary in the Node.js module itself to enable another language. All you have to do is to ship a new NPM module that implements specific interfaces for compiling script in a particular language and normalizing that script to that asynchronous function delegate that Node.js requires. So just to give you an example, despite the fact that Edge ships with C# support out of the box, the way C# support is factored internally is using the very same convention that other languages would have to follow. And in the case of C#, writing a compiler for C# was around 100 lines of code, managed code. Similarly, PowerShell and similarly IronPython took under 100 lines of code.
Okay, Kevin and Scott need to drop off. I'm just checking if they have any more questions.
I think I'm good. I've been following this for a while since I got confused when it was called Owen for a while, and then I realized, oh, no, this is something way different.
Yes, it's very cool. More generic since then.
But, you know, what is there is still some kind of crossover to Owen, right? I mean,
there is a module that I currently keep separate that is in development, so to say, which allows you to use Edge.js as a mechanism to implement and connect middleware and Express.js request handlers using .NET. So the goal there is that you can take any Owen-compatible .NET application and plug it in some place of an Express.js pipeline in Node.js. So that way you can have hybrid applications where part of the URL space is handled by Node.js handlers and part of it is handled by .NET, which may come handy, for example, when you're exposing some web APIs that are talking to MS SQL, which is more convenient to talk to from .NET, and some other parts of your application may be doing, I don't know, some web page rendering that you want to do in Node.js.
Okay. Great. Yeah, it's nice, you know, hearing about these different kind of smaller composable things that are all kind of seeming to fit together. And you know, that kind of goes back to the naming on Edge, on the homepage of the Edge site, you know, where you said an Edge is I'm spinning back now to get to the
Well, the idea is that, you know, the Edge connects two nodes, and as much as we tend to think about technologies like Node.js and .NET as completely separate universes, as much as an edge in a graph connects to nodes, then Edge.js connects different technologies inside of a single process. So that was the parallel I was aiming at with the naming.
Got it. Okay, so let's kind of wrap up with some next steps for people that are listening and interested. First of all, this website is really a great way to, and it's kind of fun too, to look at what's there. So, what's the best URL to use to get to that?
So there is that Tianchuk github.io/edge.
Okay.
And then there is obviously the GitHub project, which is already linked from there. So I'd say this is the main landing page for the project.
Great. Okay. You work on Node at Microsoft. What's the relationship? Is this, you know, any kind of Microsoft supported or Microsoft project? Or
so Edge.js is not a Microsoft project. It's my private project. It is kind of inspired by all the work I had been doing around Node.js, but it is not supported in any way by Microsoft. So that also gives me more flexibility in terms of engaging community in the project. I do take contributions. I do welcome collaboration on that project. So if you feel passionate about any aspect of the project and want to help out, then please get in touch.
Okay. So this seems very similar as well to the Script.cs thing. That's also not a Microsoft project, but, you know, and so a lot of collaboration and
I think that was Glenn's goal for Script.cs too, to kind of let the community own that project.
Great. And have you had have some people been getting involved? You already mentioned the debugging. Are there other ways that people are getting involved in this?
Well, the entire mono support, this entire effort is driven by the community. So without that support, the mono support would probably come in much later, simply because I'm not an expert in mono. So I'm very, very thankful for John Chambers for getting involved in supporting mono. And similarly for F#, there is a group of people who feel very passionate about it and are helping out to make it happen. Also, I have some internal contributors from Microsoft, most notably from the Dirk from the Monaco team over in Zurich that is also helping out solve some deep technical issues in Edge.js.
Okay, great. All right. Anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap up, including, you know, anything else you're up to or places you're speaking or anything like that?
No, I think that's good.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch, Tomasz. I had a lot of fun playing with the samples and it was very quick to set it up and so I finally clicked as I started looking at the samples and saying, okay, this is a few lines of code and I'm very easily calling into .NET and from Node. And so really exciting project.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, well, that's it for this week on Herding Code. Catch us again soon.